It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, we have a special guest named John Bianchi. He's the founder of STR Search, and he's successfully directed over 70 million investments into strong cash flowing Airbnbs across the country. We're going to be talking a lot about Airbnbs. It's a fascinating and hot topic, and I want to get right into it. As a master of deciphering complex data sets, John has 100% success rate across 150 plus properties for helping his clients acquire cash flowing Airbnbs. When he's not poring over data, he's spending quality time with his new daughter. I love that. So let's welcome John Bianchi. Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing awesome. Awesome. Great to see you. And tell me a little bit about how you got started in Airbnbs and what your background is to get into that, because I have some good friends that are in that and they're doing quite well.
Quite an extensive story. I'll give you the cliff notes. Okay. I used to be a financial advisor, yep, and I hated it. I was not good at it. I knew I was never going to be great at it. And I wanted something that was going to be more of a business that could continue to expand forever. You know what I mean? Because as an entrepreneur, you don't want to be limited in what you're capable of doing. That's and right. So I saw that the finance game was very limiting, and I started to actively look for something that was going to be better. And funny enough, like, a lot of people would not say Airbnb is better, but I saw it as this avenue that was, you know, a business that was real estate backed, that had cash flow, that could continue to expand as long as I could continue to find good properties. And I learned about a lot of other people that were crushing it in the Airbnb game. And so I took a swing at it, opened up a couple homes, didn't do great right off the bat, but just kept pushing. And then eventually got to the point where I understood the data well enough to be able to find good properties. And that's where things sort of just never ended. They just kept going. Right. So,
right. What makes the difference, John, if I could just jump right to something you said, between a good property and a not so good property?
Cash flow, making money or not. So, I mean, like, cash flow is definitely the main thing. Obviously, when you're buying real estate, there's a lot of, you want to make sure that you're making a good buy in the first place. Right. Yeah. So, you know, the Airbnb game always gets a bad rep because not a lot of people understand that there's a underlying strategy and logic of how to buy real estate well. And, you know, all the people who are buying long-term rentals and flipping and all these things for a very long time have this knowledge, but the Airbnb people are just looking at it as a way to generate cash flow, but there's also a way to generate equity. And so the difference between a good and bad property, okay, is just simply ensuring that the property that you're getting is going to be a good real estate purchase, but that it also has the ability to actually cash flow. Because if it's not cash flowing, it's not worth it. I always kind of say that if you bought a Subway and that Subway made you no money on an annual basis, you would not keep it going, right?
Right.
And an Airbnb is no different. If it doesn't make you any money, you bought a bad business.
So how do you know something's going to make you money? Or do you buy existing Airbnbs, or do you have some criteria of, like, here's where it's going to be and here's how many people there are and here are the attractions? You know, what goes into the thinking behind the cash flow?
Yeah. So, a lot, a lot. I've got a 40-hour long free course that explains the entire process, but some of the core things are, looking at what everyone else is doing and trying to understand what works and what doesn't work. So I use what is referred to as the Burger King logic. McDonald's spends millions of dollars to figure out what corner to be on. Burger King opens up across the street with the same product.
Got it.
So there are millions of Airbnbs that are out there. And all you have to do is, if you're going into Chicago or a small little town in North Carolina, you go and look at all the other Airbnbs that are in that market or in a like market, and you figure out who's making more money than who and why. Right. So why is this one Airbnb making 100,000 and this other one making 50,000? What are the differences? And it's quite literally like, you know, those games where you get two photos and you spot the difference between the two, right? Yeah. That's the game I play all day, every day. I'm just spotting the difference between a good one and a bad one. And I'm like, well, this one has a hot tub, this one doesn't. Okay. Let me make a note of that. Right. And then you're repeating that process over and over and over again until you realize that the top performing properties have certain things that the underperforming properties do not have. And those things that they have are what's allowing them to drive revenue, right? So they have a hot tub and this one does not. Therefore, it drives revenue, right? And I'm simplifying it a ton, but the general idea is just look back and forth and figure out what drives revenue and then replicate and do better than those people.
It's fascinating because it brings up another question, and that is, how do you find the data that says, hey, this one's making $100,000 and the one next door to it's not making that $100,000? Is that guess or is that?
Nope. There's so there's softwares. There's about five right now, but there's only one that I would recommend to use, which is AirDNA. And okay. AirDNA has all the data. Wow. So yeah, because Airbnb is a public website, you can create algorithms to track that public website and track the calendars of every single Airbnb that exists and be able to know when somebody's booking a property or not booking a property. And then you record it all, do a couple of equations, and you can figure out how much that property made on an annual basis.
Wow, really? That's cool.
Yeah. So there's a, yeah, you just have all the data. And I think it's the coolest thing because, you know, growing up, I always thought I was going to own like a franchise, like a Subway or McDonald's. I thought that was a really easy and interesting business model that would work for me as a person. And I always remember thinking like, it costs so much money to open one of those things. How do you know it's going to make a ton of money? And I knew that there was this family in my hometown that owned a bunch of Subways, and they had one that was kind of in like a small town making a ton of money and another one in another area that was making no money. And that intrigued me. I was like, imagine if you could just know how much every single Subway made, then you would know where to go, where not to go with your next Subway that you open and ensure that you're making a good investment, right? And that's essentially what you can do with Airbnbs is you can look at all the data. You can literally see how much everybody is doing, and then you can know where to go and where not to go. So kind of cool.
That's fascinating. I've also read a rumor to talk about the other side of the business that Airbnbs have kind of peaked and the actual company of Airbnb is having some trouble. I've personally had some trouble with the company itself when I've rented a place and the host do what they were supposed to do, and Airbnb didn't stand behind me as a client. So, you know, what's going on in that business? Is there turmoil? Is it all blown out of proportion to sell newspaper ads, or what's the deal?
I think there's a lot of clickbait happening, but I don't think it's a perfect picture either. So, like any company at scale and their size, there's going to be a bunch of issues, right? I mean, actually, any company at any size has a bunch of issues that they're constantly trying to solve, right? Yeah. So I don't think Airbnb is any different from, X or Facebook or SpaceX or whatever big company you want to talk about. They've all got their problems, right? I know that Airbnb has a lot of evolving to do. Like what you just said there, where Airbnb didn't help you in that scenario.
Yeah,
that's an issue. The host not hosting properly, that's an issue, right? Yeah. These are like major issues that are ruining the idea that makes a lot of sense. Like the idea of being able to rent out somebody's home with a large group of friends and being able to enjoy a house rather than a hotel room, that's what everybody wants, right? Sure. And if it's done properly, it's an amazing time and everyone has a great time and that's awesome. But there are bad actors that are hosts in the Airbnb space that are causing a bad name for everybody else, just like every other industry, right? But I don't know. I have a ton of confidence in it because even with all the problems that exist, if you look at it as in a different light, right? So if I'm going to be traveling, like I just mentioned, with 10 of my friends, I want to stay in a house every single time because I don't want to be across five different hotel rooms. If we just use that simple logic, Airbnb is not going anywhere for that reason.
Right.
And I think enough people have come to be comfortable with Airbnb and want to use Airbnb in different areas. And then you can even go like unique stays and small resorts and all these different little things. People book Airbnbs for those reasons as well. What I think is happening is that Airbnb is finding its place in this economy. It's finding where it works and where it doesn't work. And one area where I think it doesn't work all that well is for one bedrooms, really small places that you're only staying for one night. If I'm going to go and stay in a city for one night, I'm booking a hotel 10 out of 10 times because I can rely on it. It's going to be consistent. I don't have to worry about anything. But if I'm going with a group of friends, I'm booking an Airbnb 10 out of 10 times. Because I want to be able to have that type of space on that type of vacation. And so that's where I think Airbnb will continue to go is along those lines. And it'll just continue to figure out where it fits within this world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I'm one of those customers. I was, in fact, that story was, I was having an event in a European country And, you know, I happened to get one of the biggest houses they had available. And, you know, it just hadn't been rented in a while. And there were just a lot of problems with it, and they didn't stand behind it. So, yeah, I agree. If you're going to go someplace, you want that kind of a house family experience. You don't want a bunch of hotel rooms. It's a lot more different from when you're doing an event, from my perspective. So I completely agree. So let's see. Let's say we've got one of our listeners or viewers watching this podcast, and they want to get into this business. How do they get started?
Quite a few different ways. So if you're going to be getting started with almost no money, you only have a couple of options, right? So if you have very, very limited money, there you can either manage somebody else's Airbnb, or you can rent out a place and get it started. Now, that is a very taboo thing to say, but it is a way that can work if people want to do it, right? So, and again, these are for people with not a lot of money. So if you were a landlord, I could approach you and say, hey, you know, your property would actually turn into a great Airbnb. Would you allow me to be able to Airbnb it, and I'll pay you rent, right?
Why is that taboo?
Because you get a lot of people who are Airbnb hosts that do not treat the landlord's property well. Then the landlord gets very frustrated and annoyed with all these Airbnb guests because it's not being taken care of properly. And so then therefore turns into this big cycle and an issue. And that has happened 1,000+ times across the country. And so there's a lot of people who are really annoyed with these people trying to rent out the properties. And additionally, a lot of hosts will not tell the landlord that they're going to Airbnb it. And that's a whole other scenario, right? Yeah. So that's where there's bad actors. Now, I've done it myself personally 8 times, and I've had a good experience with it 8 times, right? And I've worked well with the landlords, but then there are scenarios where it doesn't work out. So it just kind of, you know, it is what it is. But you can get in with like $5,000, rent out a one bedroom, very cheap, right? But that allows you to get in, get started, stuff like that. This is my roadmap. Okay. So if I explain my roadmap that to people, if you're going in with absolutely no experience, you have two options.
Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
One, you rent out a very small place and try to make it work as a rental arbitrage deal for little money in. You're going to get the experience and the knowledge. You're going to learn all the operational headaches that you have to go through and build out some SOPs, right? Standard operating procedures. Or you manage somebody else's property for free. You reach out to them, say, can I, you know, manage your property for free just so I can learn these standard operating procedures so that I can learn how to do this properly so that I can try and build a business out of this. Those are your kind of lowest hanging fruits to get started. The reason you can't start to manage somebody's property and ask to be paid is because you don't know what you're doing. So the rental arbitrage and the other version, they both give you the ability to learn how to do it. And then you can reach out to people and say, hey, I know how to do this. Do you want me to do it for you for a fee? And they're just simply managing their property just like a property management company manages a long-term rental, right? You're doing all the work for the landlord and paying them out a percentage. So those are the ways you kind of get into the game and kind of get started for low money. And you can scale those ones fairly quickly, especially the property management side of things, because it doesn't cost you any additional money to get a property. You just find another client and you get them up and running, right? Now, the thing that I do is I help people find properties that they can purchase, that they can actually purchase, that are going to be good investments, that they can turn into short-term rentals. And so that option is going to cost you or going to take you anywhere from like $75,000 to $150,000 just to get into the game of owning the property, furnishing it, amenitizing it properly, and getting it up and running on Airbnb. So scaling that's a lot more difficult, but there's obviously you now own real estate, which is a great investment if you do it properly. And there's a ton of benefits doing it that way. The way that people are scaling those business models is by raising money from other people to buy more properties as they continue to go. And that's how they can kind of create this portfolio, doing joint venture deals, syndications, all those different ideas to have a portfolio that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is that working?
Yep. for some people, if they're doing it properly, some people, I'm sure they're not, right? And that's just how it goes. I mean, I'm a part of TechVestor, which is the largest short-term rental investment fund in America. They've raised over $70 million, right? And we've bought 150 properties. They all cash flow. And so it's working out really well for us, right? Extremely well. And we're going to continue to keep doing what we're doing. But I'm sure there's some people out there who I know for a fact there's people out there that have raised their money from their rich uncle and have bought the dumbest property you could imagine. And they're losing money left hand over fist. And they're going to have to sell the property, lose what all the money they put into the furniture, lose all the money they put into the amenities, possibly lose out on the purchase price of the property because some of the home values have actually come down. And so now they're probably out, you know, $50,000 to $100,000, if not more, on that property because they made the wrong purchase and it's their uncle. Now they have to go to family dinner with them, right? So, you know, those are scenarios that exist that are real as well. So there's both ends.
And how much risk is there that the municipality, the town, the county, whatever says, hey, listen, we don't want Airbnbs in our backyard, or the homeowners association passes a rule and you've got this piece of property that you just invested in, and all of a sudden that is not allowed anymore. How much risk is there to that? Is that going on still?
Depends on the market. Definitely depends on the market. We only go into markets where there's regulations already in place. And so if the town has said, hey, we're going to allow Airbnbs, but only in, you know, this area or this way, or you got to register, or, you know, there can't be one side by side. There's all these different rules for every single place. There's no one size fits all. And so I only put my clients into places that already have regulations in place, because once they're in place, it's very rare that they're going to change them and not allow them, right? Because in the first place, it's hard to get that in there in the first place. So there's only a handful of places where it's 100% not allowed. Then there's a ton of places that have not put anything in place because they just haven't had to. And then there's a whole bunch in the middle, right? So my recommendation is always go where they've already allowed it, figure out where they allow you to play within their sandbox and call it a day, right? But is there a chance that they'll eventually go back on it? Of course, they could. They could go both ways, right? Depending on how things go. Maybe they open it up, maybe they close it down. But that's always going to be a risk no matter what.
Yeah.
It's just those places where there's no regulation in place, where it's like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And San Diego is actually a good example of that, where San Diego had like 11,000 or 14,000 listings. And then they put in regulations where they're like, we're going to allow 8,000. So like, they're only going to give out 8,000 licenses in San Diego. And for anybody who has one, you know what I mean? So only 8,000 people can get it, but there's 11,000 or whatever it was. And so all those other people would be screwed. The funny thing is though, is that there's still a ton of licenses that are still available. In other words, everyone was just like, screw you, we're not getting a license.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Everyone's just like, no, it's not happening. Like that's a stupid rule. We don't agree with you, whatever it is. And they start to fight it. And that has happened as well in Austin. You know, they put a bunch of regulations in place and then it was directly against their constitutional right and their right of property and all this different stuff. And they took, the city of Austin to the state level, whatever. And multiple people have won, which means that the regulations that they put in place are not enforceable whatsoever, right? Because every time they try to enforce it, they're just going to lose. And so now the city of Austin has absolutely no regulations in place until they can figure out how to put new regulations in place that are going to work. So
yeah.
Anyways, that's my quick breakdown on that question. Regulation
wise.
That's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. So I mean, if somebody's looking to invest in something, this is a viable, you know, real estate play. Probably it's also a viable cash flow play if you get the right thing going. So what kind of returns in general are you seeing out there, you know, on return on investment or cash on cash, however you want to look at it?
Yeah. So, I can really only speak to what I'm doing with my clients and what they're finding. If you're self-managing it and we find you a property, you're likely investing anywhere from 150 to 300, into a property that's going to be between down payment, closing costs, renovations, amenities, furniture, and whatnot to get that property up and running. Right. And most people can expect to cash flow on an annual basis, anywhere from 25,000 to 75,000. Those are the general numbers that we're seeing most often. It's never perfectly 25 and, you know, on the low end and 75 on the high end. It tends to be a mix of depending on the property and your budget, but it's within that range. And that can look like a 10% cash on cash to a 20% cash on cash. Again, if self-managed, which tends to be about 80% of our clients. And the reason being is because of the STR tax loophole. So are you familiar with the STR tax loophole by any chance?
Let's talk about it.
I don't know everything about it inside and out. So I'm just going to state that right off the bat. And I'm also Canadian, so I haven't been able to take advantage of it because I'm not American. So I will do my best to explain it, but I might butcher it. But the idea is that if you own a short-term rental and you manage it yourself, there's certain requirements that you have to hit to be considered, you know, managing yourself.
Active investing. Yes.
Active investing. Yeah. It allows you to write off your W-2 income. So where most investments are passive, and you can write off your passive investments, this Airbnb and running an Airbnb allows you to write off your active income if you meet certain requirements. So we get a lot of doctors, a lot of tech people, a lot of entrepreneurs who have this active income that they're making, you know, anywhere from $150,000 to $300,000 a year. They're going to have to pay the government, you know, $50,000 in taxes, but then they get a short-term rental and it allows them to write off the $50,000 they're going to pay in income or in taxes, right? Sorry. That makes sense.
They call that check in the box, right? There's a box that you check, whether it's passive or active.
Exactly.
That allows you to have, you have to kind of prove that, I think it's 15 hours a week or something like that, that you have to show that you're actively involved in the business, and then you get the, some classification.
Exactly.
By the way, everybody, you know, listen to your accountants and,
yes.
and advisors on this. There's a lot more to it than what we're talking about here.
And yeah.
It's a big part of the investment decision. So you might as well know all about it. So, so that we don't need to go deeper than that, than to say, hey, listen, let's make people aware that it's there and they can take advantage of it. And there's an advantage of doing that.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, listen, tell us a little bit about what you do, how you do it, and how people can get a hold of you.
So to keep it super simple, I find people profitable properties. Simple as that, right? I find them, you know, you, Mark, if you came to me and you said, I had $200,000, I want to invest it into short-term rentals. What do you recommend? I would figure out your entire scenario, everything about you, what you prefer, what you don't prefer, and again, how much money you got to work with. And then I figure out which market across the United States is going to make the most sense for you specifically. That's going to give you the best return that you're looking for. And then within that market, I tell you exactly which property would make the most sense for you to purchase, and then how to set that property up to drive the most amount of revenue out of it. And so in other words, I'm just, it's a white glove service to help people figure out exactly what property makes most sense for them to purchase, right? Based on Airbnb data and their own scenario and all of the research that I've done over the past 3 years now, right? So that's the idea, without overcomplicating it, is we're finding people cash flowing Airbnbs. And anyone who wants to hire us can go to strsearch.com and schedule a call, talk with somebody on the team, get to understand all of the details and go into more details and ask all of your questions. And if you decide to move forward, you'll get to work directly with me and I'll help you find that cash flowing property. But
love it.
Yeah, so you can also,
once again, the URL,
STR, so short-term rental, STR search.com.
I love it. It's pretty simple, actually. strsearch.com. We'll have it linked up in the show notes here. What question did I not ask? Because this is a fascinating industry that, you know, there's a lot to it. Is there something that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you?
No, you asked a ton of great questions, by the way, and they were like quick, which I loved. So that was really nice. But I just want to make one statement.
Yeah.
Because this is probably one of the biggest mistakes I think people are doing. Every single property can be pretty, right? But not every single property can cash flow.
Right.
So that's the thing that people get hung up on when they get into this Airbnb game. They're looking for these beautiful A-frames, or they're looking for these beautiful locations with these beautiful properties and beautiful views and all these different things. And what they don't realize is that they're actually shooting themselves in the foot. Because if you overpay for a property where there's not a lot of demand and you don't put it together properly, you're going to lose money.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what I've built my entire business around trying to stop. So if you were to, like, my mission statement for the business is to ensure that nobody buys an unprofitable property ever again, which is why I've created 6 free Airbnb data courses where I literally give away the exact step-by-step process that I'd used to find 150 properties and they all cash flow. So it is possible, right? I know for a fact it is possible if you follow the process, but these people get hung up on, like, pickleball courts and views and A-frames. And they're just like, oh, I'm going to spend $900,000 to $1 million and $1.5 million because it's this luxury property. And it's like, you're never going to make money. And again, if your Subway never made money, why would you keep it running? Why would you keep running an Airbnb? And so don't get caught up on it being pretty. Every property can be pretty. Just ensure that it actually cash flows in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's my statement.
I love it. It's a great spiel. Well, listen, you certainly have a lot of knowledge and you make it fun. So good luck to you. And thanks for being on the Wealth Architect podcast. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me, Mark. Thank you.
And everybody else who's listening and watching, remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. And see you next time on the Wealth Architect podcast. Take care.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.